Hey everyone, welcome to the Grief Informed Podcast. I'm your host, Rachel Garcia, and this is a place where I bring you authentic conversations with people who are willing to share their journey through seasons of grief. No matter your cultural upbringing, societal conditioning, or faith practice, grief affects us all. Whether you're dealing with a loss, a diagnosis, a broken heart, or the everyday stressors of life, or love someone who is, these conversations are here to support you in that process. So be sure to check out the show notes for potential trigger warnings. And whether you're very comfortable with or deeply avoidant of grief and its many responses, you are welcome here. Thank you for being here, and now on to the episode. Hey guys, before we jump into this amazing episode, I actually wanted to say a couple of things. First, this conversation around grief and the Enneagram has been one that I have wanted to record since I knew I wanted to start a podcast. Second, you may have never heard of the Enneagram or know just a tiny bit, but I believe you're going to be able to hear the deeper medicine with the incredible breadth of information we cover. Mandy stated at the end of this podcast something that I think that is so good it needs to be said at the start. She said, "Take what serves, chew the meat, and spit out the bones." The Enneagram is truly an incredible framework to understand yourself and your inner world, but if you find yourself in acute grief or a space of overwhelm or deep sadness, please know that you can come back to the Enneagram work when your world feels a little more settled. So if that's you, what I would love for you to do when you listen is to, or if you feel lost while listening, with all the what is a stress line, what's a wing, all of the different terminologies, just focus instead on the messaging we discuss about each type and the medicine that can apply to all of us no matter what your number is. You're going to hear some truly valuable insights on how to navigate grief, and you can listen to that outside of understanding it through the framework and scaffolding of the Enneagram. Mandy is an incredible source of Enneagram knowledge, and the way that she just flows through the information, I feel like you're going to return back to this again and again. So thank you guys for listening, and now on to the episode. Today I have with me Mandy Capehart, who is a grief coach and author of the book Restorative Grief and also the host of the Restorative Grief podcast. One of the things that I love that she says is grief is messy, and so is she. And that just makes me feel like she is my people. So I know you're going to love hearing from her. Welcome to the show, Mandy.
Hi, Rachel. Thank you so, so much for having me. I love conversations about grief and loss and how to move through it. So I'm excited to talk with you today.
I love meeting another human that could geek out on grief and the Enneagram. So before we get started and diving right in, could you tell us a little bit about your cultural upbringing and background?
Yeah, so I am very obviously to you, a white girl from the Northwest. I have grown up in the Pacific Northwest my whole life. I was raised in a two-parent household until I was about middle school, and then my sister and I went to live with my mom, and back and forth with my mom and my dad. I really think that actually shaped a ton of how I approach grief work now, because of the fact that as a young person, I was losing people left and right, whether it was to divorce, to moves, to death. And I had parents that were willing to sit with me in a lot of ways through the pain of that. And I also had parents who didn't know how to sit with themselves in a lot of ways through the pain of that. And so as I've gotten older, the context of my life has continued to expand to recognize that even as I'm becoming more educated in certain areas or becoming certified in different areas of this work, I am still not the expert in someone else's grief experience. I am an educator. I am a coach. I am a partner. I can sit alongside people, but I am ultimately only the expert on my own story. And even that, I hold that title expert very, very lightly.
Right.
We're always in process. Like you said, grief is messy, and so am I. I'm always learning more about who I'm becoming and how I can expand what I experience through loss. So even as recently as the other day, I was talking about a loss in my own life and listening to a friend discuss a loss in their lives and just recognizing this is part of what I learned when I was young. I had a big family around me and then I didn't. And then I had them around again and then I didn't. And there were so many shifts that I think it just taught me how to be comfortable with flexibility and knowing that nothing is permanent. So what does that mean?
Right. I love that. You also mentioned pre-call that you lost your mom in 2018. Yeah.
2016, my mom died after 4 months of cancer treatments. She was diagnosed in June that year, in 2015, and her decline was just very quick after she started treatments.
Mm, wow, I'm so sorry. You have two, you said you have a sister that younger or older?
She's 6 years younger than me.
Oh, wow. Okay, so you're the oldest sister, which would lead me to my question. Do you know, or no, can you tell us what your Enneagram number is?
Oh, my friend, I am an Enneagram 8 with a 7 wing and a social subtype.
Okay, wow. So how does that inform your personality? For those that aren't familiar yet with the Enneagram 8.
I have always been one to challenge conclusions, authority, relationships, definitive periods at the end of the sentence. My question, I wasn't really the kid that asked why a lot in the sense of like, make it make sense to me. But as I got older and wanted to take up space in the world, I realized that I needed to choose that for myself. No one else was going to make up space for me, especially after I lost my mom. I realized that's quite a bit later when I was in my 30s. But it still was something that as a young person and as we discussed growing up inside of religion, I wasn't taught to take up space. And so it's funny, the Enneagram actually helped me recognize the value of taking up space and the value of giving myself time to learn what that looks like, especially because as a beginning Enneagram student about 12 to 15 years ago, I took a test and tested very high as a 3, a 7, or an 8. So we know I'm an assertive number, but at that point, I felt a lot of similarities with a 3. And so I spent a few years exploring what the type 3 looks like and feeling like this doesn't quite fit, but I don't know what else could fit because I'm not angry. Dear listener, if you are constantly saying, well, I'm not angry, you might be angry and that is okay. It's totally okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, that type 8 is that courageous and confrontational and in a healthy space, vulnerable and soft and available for the really difficult, like hardest stuff you can approach. Yeah.
I love that. And I think I love to describe the 8 is like, they're the reason, y'all are the reason why we have revolutions. Like we have Viva la Revolución because of the 8s. And so I think that's powerful. Like the energy for justice is so palpable and it's such a gift. Well, that was my question. That was going to be my next one. Like, what do you love about the Enneagram in your own life? And that perfectly described it. So I would love to know, or let our listeners know, I'm assuming, okay, that there's a lot of people that might be listening to my podcast for the first time and thinking, we've heard Rachel mention the Enneagram, ask or guess that, but maybe they've never taken a test. So could you tell us the like elevator speech of the Enneagram for those that are new to what it is and where they might be able to find out their number?
Yeah. So Enneagram is simply a method of expressing your motivation as a human being, finding that core motivation beneath why you do what you do or who you are, what you are. And I like to identify it as something that shows us the box we start in and a pathway forward into a more expansive way of being. I think people's understanding of personality typings and different tests can be really difficult because we put them on like a name tag and then wear it around thinking, this is why I am the way that I am. And that would be a dishonest way to use the Enneagram. Instead of saying, well, I'm just a 2, so I guess I can't help but help, the Enneagram gives us language and a pathway toward what do you want to do with that 2-ness, with that desire to help in a different way than you might do it without an awareness of what you're doing.
Right, right. I have loved the analogy of, I love the, most people know what the Myers-Briggs is, and like the Myers-Briggs being, I describe it as, it's the test that helps you understand why you prefer to structure your world the way you do, how you process information. It's very much, it's very tactile and understanding, this is why I want my world to look a certain way. And the Enneagram feels like it's in, it's a very internal view of your inner world, of why you might function the way that you do, why things stress you the way that they might be, stress you more than they do another person, and also why your gifts are different and how to access both of those places. It's like an mm-hmm. internal look that's very, it's very personal, but it's also, it's a beautiful modality of understanding yourself deeper internally mm-hmm. as well as other people that you're in relationship with.
Totally. Yeah. Yes. And that's why it's so powerful with grief work as well, is because it's not putting us in, like I said, into a box and saying, this is how you will heal from grief. That would be an irrational and inappropriate thing to do with grievers. Enneagram work allows us to ask questions instead of come to conclusions, which I really appreciate. I think asking questions is how we determine what is actually meaningful to us, what matters, what we value, instead of saying, I now value being an external processor or an extrovert or an intuitive, whatever Myers-Briggs puts you on. Right. You know. And the funny thing about it too, and I think this is important, is when we look at our holistic context of who we are, Enneagram allows us and in fact asks us to go back into our context and be really honest with what hurts and that side of us that we might have minimized or suppressed or ignored or exiled, right? There's lots of language that comes into play with it. Whereas with other things, we put this label of, well, I'm the commander. And so I put that on my desk. And now everyone is looking at me with this label that is static.
Yeah.
That doesn't really necessarily change based on my core understanding, my true self. It changes based on if I'm allowed to be in charge of people and command them or not.
Right.
Like, it can shift so much in life. And really, the Enneagram is meant to help us flourish as we are, who we are, where we are, rather than, I don't know, trying to refine and be, quote, better.
Right. No, I agree 100%. So can you give us the overview of the numbers, like how it works? You've got your number and then your wing and your stress and your integration.
Yeah. Yeah, so Enneagram, it's a circle of 9 numbers. Each one has a line that goes towards 2 other numbers. One of those lines is considered a growth line, meaning that when we are doing really intentional work to pay attention to who we are and how we show up in the world, we're going to also emulate characteristics of this other type. Because while we may lead with the energy of a single type, one number on the Enneagram wheel, we are all 9 numbers. Every person is going to recognize a characteristic or something within themselves that is reflective of a different number on the wheel. The difference being the motivation behind the action of each of those types is different. And so I liked to tell people in the beginning of this work, I could ask one of every 9 types to go on a hike and every one of them would say yes for a completely different reason. Mm. One would say yes, and I've got all the first aid kit supplies we could need. One would say, obviously, I love leading hikes. One would say, I know the correct path to take. One would say, oh my gosh, we're going to have so much time to talk about our feelings along the way. One would say, do you know the history of this mountain is actually blah, 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 right? There's a motivation for each person's desire to connect with themselves and with others that's different. So within those numbers, they're all adjacent to the next number in the row, right? So the 1 is adjacent to the 2. It's also adjacent to the 9. And that means the same thing as the energy that we lead with in the center. Those energies from the other numbers on our sides are called wings. And we have access to that energy a little more strongly than we do a number that's completely across and not connected by a line. Mm. All of that sounds so hard to comprehend. So if you are like, what the crap is she talking about? Just look up the picture mm-hmm. and take a moment to observe, oh, the numbers all connect and they're all touching and they have little wings and numbers next to them. Because it sounds very complicated, and in some ways it can be. That's one thing that I love about this. There's always nuance left to discover because that is indicative of who we are as people. There is always more nuance. There is always more clarity. There is always new information to gain or insight to reveal. And this is such a great framework for us who are, especially when we're in stress or grieving, those other lines coming out. We've got the one that goes towards health. It goes towards another number that we can look really stressed by, or pardon me, that connects to, and that we start to emulate the energy of that type when we are overwhelmed or feeling really down. And all of these are moves that happen when we are in a state of like ego-driven, unrealistic worldview. Mm-hmm. The world is unsafe. And so we try to protect ourselves, avoid certain things and labels, and project what seems gross or bad to us onto other people. And so that's that stress side of the Enneagram work that we do. We either and we live in between those at any given moment, so we can have a very realistic, integrated worldview where we know our role in the play in the world and how we show up, and it affects the way we think, act, and feel in a healthy way, or the opposite.
Right. And go to stress. Okay. So if, and I'll link in the show notes, but where would you recommend people are taking the test?
Yeah, the tests, there's quite a few online. Some of them are really great. Truity.com is a great one. The Enneagram Institute has one. I think that the, I want to say it was like Crystal Knows or something long ago that was also really good. The thing about testing online, it's a great baseline to start if you are really struggling, or if you were like me and you ended up with very high scores in three different numbers. Hiring and working with someone individually is a great way to go. They can help ask questions and typically find really the energy you lead with and give you some good information to start with. And there's also quite a few good books. I love Suzanne Stabile's work and Beatrice Chestnut's work as places to start discovering like, okay, I took a test and it gave me these two numbers. Let me go read some of their work and find out which ones really resonate. Because again, you're going to have a lot of the same energy of all the numbers. It's not about the behavior. It's about the motivation.
Right. And each number, it's helpful to know, each number comes with a core fear. I'm going to say this wrong. Core fear and a core desire.
Yeah.
I say, yeah. And so knowing those, that's part of that motivation, is to either avoid that altogether or to be inspired by that motivation. So the entire excitement I have about talking about Enneagram as it relates to grief is just as you said. I'm an Enneagram 2, and knowing how my number to stress and my number to growth is impacted by grief, or it helps me navigate grief, has been so transformative in my life. And then being able to notice even with my children, how that relates in their world and navigating, let's say, even if we're talking about if it's grief or big emotion or difficult emotion, we'll say that, then this is the podcast. This is the conversation that is going to be really insightful once you know your number. But when you're listening to each of these numbers, every single one, you're going to find a nugget that relates and that resonates. And so it's going to be good medicine for going through each one. So we just kick off, and I say we start with one. Would that be good?
Sounds good.
Yeah. Okay. So Enneagram 1, the reformer. And for the reformer, the want is to be right and efficient. That's a key motivator. And their stress point, they go to the 4, which I can be moody. Kind of, it says irrational. I know some of these are like they step on your toes. I'm just sorry. This is going to step on toes. But in growth, they are spontaneous and joyful and go to that 7. So with the Enneagram 1, what would you say are some things we would need to know about their grief, navigating grief through that number?
Yeah. So just to clarify too, so we are talking about how that average Enneagram type, when they are grieving, can go inadvertently to this disconnected state of protecting their ego, protecting the sense of themselves. And when they are protecting themselves in kind of an average state, they might have kind of like a 5 out of 10 day, things are fine. When grief enters the chat, all of that sense of self gets discombobulated and goes and scatters, right? And so they start grasping. This is all people. We start grasping at the values we hold on to, what matters, what feels comfortable, what feels easiest, least resistant. that typically is the most basic expression of ourselves. And so for a one, that sense of perfectionism really mm-hmm. comes to the surface, because if there's a perfect way to grieve, well, hell, I will find it, because I am justice oriented. I am principled. I'm self-controlled. How could I not? Mm-hmm. Right. That is also a characteristic of the four, which is their stress line. And when it gets really icky, they get really, really uncomfortable in themselves. And so they hear this messaging of like, grief is messy and you should be able to control it. Mm-hmm. If you can't keep it together, you are a failure. The idea of being able to reframe grief, reframing that there is no right or correct way to grieve, because two things can be true, is mm-hmm. really necessary for a one. So there is no inner brokenness that lasts forever. There is a sense of brokenness, but it is also true that we are whole people at the same time. Mm-hmm. That both and gray space is really powerful for a one, because they have an inner critic that is louder than the rest of ours, who is constantly saying, actually, your inner critic, I am the rightness, I am the perfection you're seeking, and you need to please me. So that positive side of the Enneagram four being this expressive, clear, unique characteristic person, mm-hmm. right, invites that Enneagram one to really embrace the uniqueness of their grief story as meaningful instead of being judgmental about it. And that is what removes perfection, right? Being able to hold ourselves without comparison allows us to break judgment of someone else's process and really moves us towards a feeling of worthiness in our expression of our grief. So they can begin to heal.
Yeah. Oh, love that. Oh, I mean, you're just on a roll. Like, that was out of the gate. This is so good. So good. I was, I asked some friends and family that are obsessed with the Enneagram as I am, to kind of give me an idea based on their number. And the one that I reached out to said that fairness matters a lot to me. And in order to be fair, I think it has to be important for me to step outside of my own grief to acknowledge the grief of others and not compare the two. She remembered early on in her journey with her son who had to have a major surgery that was life-changing for them to get a feeding tube. The huge upheaval to their day-to-day, and a friend of hers stopped herself from telling her about something she was worried about, and after some digging admitted that she was grieving her child needing ear tubes, but, quote, knew that was so much more minor than what her son was going through. And she said, my Enneagram One friend said, I promised that day to give grace and an open platform to my friends to share their grief without judgment from me, because grief is grief and pain is pain. And if we start stacking ours up to others, someone will always have it worse. So it was like that yep. fairness mindset of the one to really be fair to others as well opened up her ability to yeah. hold space for others.
Well, and to not minimize her friend, because if her life experience hadn't been mired in grief at the moment, she would never have said, oh my gosh, but people are starving the world over. Your child has to have ear tubes. At least you have access to modern medicine, you know, yeah. all of those things that we say to try and make ourselves more comfortable with someone else's discomfort. Mm-hmm. Kudos to your friend. That's so yeah. insightful.
It was, yeah, she's amazing. Okay, the Enneagram 2, the helper. Motivations are nurturing, self-aware. Or being self-aware, or I guess needing to be. I'm the two. but connection, I would say, are key motivations for the Enneagram too. Stress is 8, going to aggressive and dominating. And then when going in growth goes to the 4, which becomes very life is beautiful, altruistic, really appreciating the senses, if you will. What would you have to say about grief, navigating that?
Yeah, I think it's important too to just, you did a really good job pointing out, well, we go to that 8 side, which is domineering and aggressive and assertive. And one thing that's powerful about this type of conversation about our growth and our stress lines is when we identify that going to our stress line doesn't mean we're going to a number that is bad.
Yeah.
And we can take the morality out of it is so important, because basic understanding of personality type testing means we are wanting the best answer. We want the good one, right? Right. When we get to 3s, we're going to talk about the most beautiful, wonderful, excellent yes. type, right? And so a 2 who is learning to move toward themselves, even in stress, is going to recognize that there is power that I have access to on this stress line to 8. When I am dysregulated, when I am stressed, when I am grieving, I can get to this space where I have access to the energy to stop leaving myself out in the cold while I care for everyone else. Mm-hmm. And I can learn to prioritize myself without guilt, right? So that negative messaging of a 2 is if you stop caring for others, you're selfish and you need people to need you. You need them to love you that way because you meet their needs and you can't let them down. But when we're grieving, we have to let people down. We have to, or else we're letting ourselves down. And the power of an 8 being able to say, I need to put myself out here and prioritize me, because if I don't, then I'm useless to anyone.
That's right.
So being able to, instead of like seeking their validation or their approval through their actions and protecting that ego that says I'm powerful because I'm needed, they can actually own their space, expand their own context without having to apologize for taking up space and justifying their need to grieve. They're allowed to say no. They learn the power of alone time, and they learn about how it is okay to release any pressure of making sure others feel okay around us, right? Mm-hmm. They can center themselves without having to decenter everyone else. They can say what they want and mean what they say and take back some of that energy that they pour out towards others. And that, like you said, on the high side of a 4, that's that embodied expressiveness and in a way that allows for others to be exactly who they are, where they are, without trying to rescue them.
Right. Oh, that's so good. There's so many tangents that I want to go on. And for me personally, being this is the number that I have, the 8, and that has been such a gift for me, in that when I get to where I'm feeling anger, it is a beautiful invitation for me to ground into myself and figure out where am I needing to communicate? Where have I been putting myself last and needing to say the hard thing? And it also leads me to I'm grieving underneath the anger. The anger has been able to pinpoint, hey, this is reminding you of something, and that's good and it's okay. And like, we can look deeper. And then I love the aspect of the self-care. One of my friend that's a 2 said, they've learned it's okay to step away and take a break from making sure everyone else is okay and focus on their own healing. It's not their responsibility to make sure anyone but themselves is okay in that moment, which is huge for grief. It is not uncommon. I used to do this all the time, is as soon as somebody, I would be going through something hard, and instead of reaching out to a friend to say that's what I was doing, I would reach out and go, hey, how are you doing? It was a beautiful distraction from...
Well, that's the ego, right? Yes. That's the ego projecting what they need in order to get safety.
Yes. Yeah.
You're creating it and you're asking, hey, can you pay attention to me? Because I'm hurting, but I don't know how to say it.
Right. Exactly.
Great. Now you do.
And thank God I have learned and done the work to be able to recognize that tendency and step into vulnerability and say, okay, what I'm actually needing for myself is to be able to communicate to someone what's going on with me. Okay. That's so good. Okay. Number 3, the achiever. The motivation is wanting to be affirmed and admired to impress. And they go to 9 in stress, and then to 6 in growth. And so give us your feedback there.
Yeah. So that 3 energy is so enigmatic and driven and efficient and clear and bright, but it is also so guarded because it's a very tenuous confidence that a lot of 3s function within, because so much of that confidence is connected to productivity. And if there's anything that disappears in grief, it is productivity. It is the least productive time of our lives. And so this negative messaging that 3 has is if you stop achieving, you will disappear. They'll forget about you. And your grief is just a distraction from being productive and moving forward and making a name for yourself. And when you are grieving, you can't walk into the room and know who has the power and know who to buddy up against or alongside, right? So the 9 is the lowest energy type on the Enneagram. So they have a more methodical, very intuitive, kind of curious approach. And when a 3 who goes from being super high energy suddenly has none left, their pain gets a lot louder. They're also feeling repressed, even though they're in the middle of the feeling center. And I know we didn't talk about intelligence centers, but see, there's just so much to go on about.
Layers.
Yeah. But I would say for that three who is feeling that grief and recognizing, okay, I'm really low, I'm feeling more like that nine energy is where I'm leading from, it's important to recognize that you don't have to make things happen or keep performing while you are in pain. You are actually valuable in and of yourself as an individual. You don't have to earn a trophy. You don't have to set a standard. Your discomfort in slowing down doesn't mean that you're losing your energy or your momentum or who you are. It just means that you're actually finding a place where you can access your heart again and learn how to rest and how to recover and connect with your emotions instead of avoiding them through constant action, right? Because the gift of that nine is their ability to go inside and be still. They're not always able to identify it, but when you have the access to a slower pace of life, things get quieter around you. And the stuff that's deep within that wants to be validated, that wants self-acceptance, is able to get a little bit more noisy and get your attention instead of having you constantly focusing outwardly to make space and find acceptance.
Yes. I think that you hit it right there with the rest, I think, for the three. The being able to rest in just taking care of themselves during a painful loss or hard emotions, being able to give permission to rest is huge. And so the three in my world said basically that community, the tendency to want to just to shut down, become kind of apathetic, like of that nine energy in that stress point. And that being able to communicate to people that feel safe and be able to let their guard down and that they don't have to perform, they don't have to be impressive in that moment, that they can just be real honest and vulnerable is a huge medicine for them.
Yeah, I think that the assertive types, those 8-3-7s, being in leadership roles is often a really scary thing to release because, again, ego is like, hey, you're a leader. What are you leading if you don't have anyone following you? Or if you're not setting a great example, there's a lot of limitation and even violence against ourselves when we cannot step back and say like, ooh, who am I if I'm not leading anyone?
Right.
You're a whole person. Well, plenty of people out here not leading. So they're still people.
And let's reframe what, who says leading isn't allowing yourself to be seen as, hey, I am a human. Precisely. I'm having a human experience and experiencing emotions. Yeah. Like we get to, you get to reframe that. Yeah. That is so good. Okay. The Enneagram 4, the individualist. Motivations are wanting to express individuality, and in stress go to two, but in growth go to one. Tell us that one.
Yeah. So those expressive, dramatic, beautiful fours. I will say this. Here's my caveat whenever I talk about fours. Fours and eights have a ton in common. We're both super comfortable with discomfort. Fours will fight me tooth and nail that melancholy nature in within them means they understand grief in and out. And so I just want to lovingly say grief has typically a thing you can point to that says this is where my grief is coming from. And melancholy is just a state of unrest, of disconnect, of sadness that really doesn't have a thing, a source that you can put your finger on. So one of the most important parts about grief work for a four is recognizing their intelligence, their willingness to go deep does not mean they have hit the bottom and gathered all the information. That might be a little adjacency to the five, even though they're not connected directly to the five by lines. But I love the fours because their negative messaging when they are in duress, especially going to that too, is not only do I have needs, no one will ever understand all of my needs because they are so incredibly unique to me. And I say that even my tone sounds kind of mocking, and that's not at all what I mean. It's just such a devastation for a four who does not have space or permission to be embodied in themselves and be honest that they need to understand new language to express themselves well. And I think that that becomes a real sticking point for fours. When they don't have the language they need, they become very isolated and dramatic, and pain needs meaning, right? In some degree, to feel impactful and to feel grandiose enough to be important, worth my attention, right? Yeah. Okay. So reframing that negative messaging is, of course, people will understand our grief. And for a four, they can take on the high connectability and skill of connection from that two side. So while their individual grief is deeply personal and incredibly unique, it doesn't have to be isolating. And in fact, getting outside of our own perspectives and building connection, even through the lens of our grief, is what creates grounding and space for healing. So that stress of grief might encourage the four to really sit and ruminate and stay in their own emotions and in their own castle of melancholy by their own design. But ultimately, that just makes the intensity of that feeling loop so much more loud and endless. And so the gift of that too means they can slow down, that they can learn to reach out to others, that they can identify, oh, when a two is doing well, they are able to say, hey, I have needs and it means something important to me for others to help me meet those needs. That's an act of strength. Mm-hmm. Grief isn't something we perform. It's let me be honest about it so that I can be seen as worthy, instead of saying, well, I'm worthy because I have needs, or I'm worthy because I'm so unique. No one's ever been this unique. But fours are so rich and so aware of the nuance. And that is actually an incredible superpower for fours in grief.
It really is. I have a four in my house. So my friend that I reached out to as a four said that in 2024 for her, there was so much repression and not allowing of grief or feelings of any kind openly and with no shame or judgment. And that even though the latest losses that she had before Christmas or around Christmas, she's discovered that deep grief, at first she did need to be, she said, isolated. And I said, I wonder if we reframe that as insulated. Like she was in, from a healthy perspective for her, she needed to take some time for herself, because she said it was so raw that even talking about it initially was like poking an open bleeding wound. She also had to be kind to herself about not sharing the grief and experience with too many people, at least at first. She kept herself insulated and had to also deal with the guilt of not being more open about it. But what I have seen from her is that sense of, as she's allowed herself to at least first acknowledge it with her, then she goes to the trusted people and shares openly with what she's dealing with. And it's become less like she won't repress it even from herself. And force having to learn, like you said, they're going to navigate deeper, go deeper. Just because you can feel deeply doesn't mean you have got to the bottom of it. And so that's that medicine against repression for your, even to yourself, and then to other people you can share with. That's good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So Enneagram 5, the investigator, this individuals motivated to process knowledge, understand their environment, have everything figured out. And stress goes to 7 and in growth goes to 8. Tell us about that.
Oh, fives are some of my favorite people, and understandable because they have a growth line to 8. And so I see wonderful, beautiful things in them. But fives are perceptive and innovative, and they're also secretive and isolated. And to admit that they are grieving would be an incredible affront to the type that feels they can mentally source anything, right? Mm-hmm. I live with a five, and I occasionally will say, hey, if we could have thought our way through this, we would have done it by now. There are other modalities. There's other ways of approaching information and situations that are inclusive of our whole selves, heart, mind, body, spirit. And so a five that is grieving is hearing this language of like, you have to figure this out. No one is going to understand you. And it's much safer for you to withdraw and preserve your energy than risk being overwhelmed by talking about it and draining yourself, right? Mm-hmm. So that five, when they move towards 7, because a 7 is so avoidant when they're stressed, they can be very scattered, but they're also another head type. They also think their way through everything. The 7 has the ability to, just like a five, retreat into their mind and analyze every deal or every detail, every idea to the nth degree to try and understand and control it. But like I said, healing happens in the body.
Yes.
And through connection with others, not just in our thinking. Our thinking changes the way we approach things, but it doesn't necessarily give us a better approach. It's not a healthier approach. It's just part of the whole approach. And so the gift of that seven encourages an Enneagram five to step outside of their mental fortress and remember, like, it's okay to engage with the world outside of the internet. I really think for fives, the internet is such a beautiful drug. Yeah. So easy to escape into and to just keep rabbit holing into more information as a protector, like a guardian against feeling their grief. But the reality is, fives, you know darn well what you need to navigate this. And you might need to learn a little more about yourselves, but the high side of seven is allowing that intuitive, spontaneous, and very versatile approach guide, not just knowledge. But everything else, that intuition, the understanding, like the high side of eight is body intuition and knowing that I can trust my gut to help me move toward healing, not just keep protecting myself and staying detached.
I love that. Oh, so good. I have a couple of fives in my world, but the one that reached back out said, having someone to talk to that has an extreme attention to detail to be able to highlight inconsistencies when the five is describing the grief in context. He, like, just his answer is so beautifully five. It's amazing.
I was just thinking that.
and this one just recently got his doctor because he got his PhD, so it's not surprising. He said, the skilled, trusted person has the discernment to know what pieces need to be oriented rightly so that the five can find their way through the forest. And it's basically what you said is the coming out of the mental fortress, being able to talk with someone about it. It doesn't necessarily mean that that five, when they, it's almost this this idea of, which is hard for me as a, like, I cry at anything. I could cry right now if I wanted to, if we started talking about something. So like the five in talking about their experience that would lead them to their grief is almost like it's, once they're able to talk about it with somebody who can navigate that with them, it's going to feel less burdensome. It may not be an emotional experience like what I might have or someone else, but it's going to be their way of connecting to what's actually happening in their in the embodied experience.
Yep. Yeah. I have, like I said, quite a few friends who are fives and family members, and it takes a lot. It takes like 20 reminders. Hey, if you need to talk, I'm here to listen. And it also takes me as a grief educator to get out of education mode and just listen and be able to create a safe space where they are not going to have more information overload, because that's also a big part of it. That fear of, I'm going to be overwhelmed if I talk. It doesn't have to be so. It just, like, to your friend's point, I have to be able to trust the connection I'm leaning toward, that they won't just flood me, and that they will listen and have some insight that is useful and not just different or interesting to them.
Absolutely. Active listening for the five. Yes. Absolutely. Okay. Enneagram six, the loyalist. Motivations are want to have security, to feel supported by others, and to fight against anxiety. And their stress point is three, and the growth point is nine.
Yeah. So Enneagram 6 is such an engaged and responsible type. This is also the type that has a counter type again. So much nuance in the Enneagram. The way that the 6 might create safety for themselves is going to be very different. Either it's a retreat or it's an attack. And they can look like 8s. They can look like 9s. And they do have a growth line to 9, of course. But it's an interesting, such an interesting number, because I would even argue, I like to think about a lot of the world as sixes, because they're looking for leadership. They're looking for a safe environment or organization that they can really trust, where they don't have to continually work. There's that stress line to three, and be productive to prepare for the worst. So this, the Enneagram six who's grieving is hearing this like internal automatic message that says you need to prepare for the worst. This is terrible, and worse things could happen. Mm-hmm. And if you do not anticipate every possibility, again, as a head type, something is going to go wrong, and it's going to be your fault because you weren't prepared enough. Mm-hmm. So that three stress line becomes hyperactive, hyperproductive, hyper guarded. Whereas the high side of three has the ability to recognize I am working overtime and scanning for potential losses and uncertainties, but grief is not a puzzle that I can solve. It's not something I can truly insulate against. It's not something I can prevent. This is an experience I have to learn to both move through and integrate into my life, because for a six, having a framework, having a security system that they can trust is really intentional and important, but that can be something that they build a scaffolding within instead of always looking to an external action that can be taken that prevents fear and more loss. That question becomes, what is actually serving my healing and what can be something lasting that I internalize? Because I'm already capable, I'm already strong, I've already done a ton of research and work to build safety in my world. And I can find people that I trust, absolutely, but ultimately I have to learn how to trust myself and really move forward at my own pace. And I think that that's something the high side of three emulates, so much trust in themselves, so much confidence. Mm-hmm. And that's something that sixes can recognize, oh, I'm super stressed. How can I trust myself more right now? How can I identify my skills and be confident within them? Even when I'm stressed, even when I'm grieving, I don't have to move toward health just to have confidence in myself. Having confidence is what moves me back toward that embodied true self that I am.
Mm, yes, that's so good. The person that responded to this said, and I love this because this is a beautiful teenager perspective of a six. So I love this. She said to just let myself feel, because bottling up my emotions until they explode is not good for anybody. But it's the true essence of the permission to feel through it rather than the high alert, constantly looking for what could go worse or the worst case scenario out. Like, it's taking it from the head to the heart and the body and being able to actually feel what you're feeling, what feels true in this moment, even if it's just this moment. I think that was beautiful, being able to just allow it. Okay. Enneagram 7, the enthusiast. So their motivations are wanting to maintain their freedom and happiness and avoid missing out and to keep themselves excited. Their stress point being 1 and their growth point being 5.
Yeah. I have to tell you a tiny anecdote. I was meeting a giant group of friends from Twitter in person about 4 years ago now. And the group that I ended up being with the entire weekend that I just stuck with, we started talking about the Enneagram at one point, and I knew my one friend was a 1. Everyone else in the group was a 7. Oh. And I kind of giggled and I'm like, no wonder I'm having the most fun ever, because I have a 7 wing and I feel so safe and wonderful with all of you. And my sweet friend who's the 1 was like, yeah, I'm a little stressed out. I'm like, yes, it's okay. Come toward the light. Come toward the 7s. Come toward me. We're going to keep you in having a great time.
Yeah.
But it was so funny. I was like, oh, okay. I see why I like all of you.
Yes.
Yeah, because 7s, they're enthusiastic, they're playful, they're versatile, they're fun, they're energetic, they are always looking for something, I'm going to say better to do, even though that's just not the right word for it. They're always looking for what could be more fun than this.
Yeah.
And grief is the opposite. So as a 7, that avoidance factor gets so loud. There has to be something that I can think my way through to a new thing, right? There has to be a better way. There has to be something more fun. There has to be something that's busy and light and playful, because if I stop moving or stop thinking about good things, grief will consume me. Mm-hmm. Well, 7 in that stress goes toward the 1. And we've already talked about that 1 energy can be perfectionistic, but it can also be incredibly justice oriented, incredibly clear minded, which is something I love for the 7, because that clear mindedness allows a 7 to slow down, embrace the structure and stability that is available inside of grief. And it can feel like, hey, that's the complete opposite of what I want to do. But the reality is when we run from distraction to distraction, eventually we run out of gas and we're not solving our grief. We're just making it take a break. We're just delaying access to that. So that one who is a little more structured, a little rigid at times, but is capable of creating really healthy like boundaries and rituals means that seven can begin to follow through on self-care and setting their own boundaries and pursuing something that feels good, but that is also not just avoidance. Giving themselves permission to like simplify their commitments and really lean into what their values are in this season and become very steady within that, being their own source, again, going inside and creating a scaffolding that is stable for themselves based on what they want and permission, giving themselves permission to settle within that instead of just flying by the seat and trying to think of a better thing to do for the day.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Okay. So you mentioned the being able to create the structure for the self-care, which is so powerful and is medicine for the seven. I knew someone who, as a seven, whenever they were having a day of overwhelming and they knew that it was very intense emotion or stress or anxiety, they started their day by taking a bath. Like they literally would just get in the bath. And it was the most beautiful thing because it was them allowing that space to be able to just be with it. And then they would have the strength to move on through their day, which was amazing because my friend that I texted to ask, okay, what would be your advice for sevens in grief? Or not advice, but what have you learned? And and she said to let it come as it needs to carve out space to grieve when it starts to call and let the grief overcome my body and my emotions. And when it washes over, which I thought was powerful, she said washes because of the bath, feel it fully. And after it's felt fully and as honestly as possible in that sacred space, wash my face, blow my nose, and move forward with what is next. That's not seven. Sometimes that's sleeping. Sometimes that's working or being productive. Sometimes that's watching a movie, reading a book. But what I'm hearing, like, so beautifully said is that it's creating that space. Another seven in my world said, I tend to see the positive except for when I get into a certain mind frame. I don't think it's a coping avoidant mechanism, but she can truly see the rainbows through the storm. And she said she didn't experience much grief growing up, so she never really had the opportunity to avoid it. It wasn't until her miscarriage where she says, I had to really face it head on. What helped me was music. I'd turn on music and just weep. I'd listen to the same few songs over and over again, and also journaling is huge. I'm an external processor, but writing things out or drawing a picture was so helpful for me to not be stuck in frozen overwhelm. Then I could talk to her, to my husband or my sister or a friend after processing through my journal. And I just thought those were powerful. It's like, it's about creating that structure and that space. Like you said, that leaning on that high one of let me create the efficiency for you to go here. Let me allow that space. I think that's powerful.
Yeah.
Okay. Enneagram 8, the challenger. Motivations want to be self-reliant, prove their strength, and resist weakness. In stress can go to 5 and then in growth to 2. This is you.
Yeah, this is me. You have to hear all my own stuff come through. Eights are independent to the nth degree. They are aggressively autonomous. They do not want to be controlled. And in order to maintain that type of independence, an eight in an average ego-driven state is going to look as strong as possible. It's going to suppress all of their perceived weaknesses. Any expression of vulnerability is going to be set aside. And to your point earlier, every bit is going to say, I am the leader everybody wants, and I'm going to embody that no matter what, because I can't afford to slow down and lose control.
Yeah.
In stress, the eight is going down to that 5, and they get really stuck in rumination, trying to figure out what is the problem? What is holding me back from being in control? Why don't I feel like I can have control right now? And the truth is, you can't control grief. You can't manage it. You can't avoid it. It will happen to all of us. And so being able to move away from that idea that I have to be strong all the time allows the Enneagram 8 to understand that strength is nothing without vulnerability. Vulnerability is the, this is my own definition, but it is the act of recognizing all of your weaknesses and your faults and embracing them without judgment or without feeling like you have to expose them and make them okay or justify why you have these vulnerabilities. They just are true. And seeing ourselves as superhuman is really easy as an eight because we're really damn good at everything we try to do, mm-hmm. right? We have these natural tendencies. We're intuitive body centers of intelligences. And so we have the, and we have the most energy of any other types on the Enneagram. So when there's a task, I'm the first in line. When there's something to lift, yeah, I can lift it, right? There's no stopping that. But as a griever, the energy is zapped. It's out. Mm-hmm. Grief makes me want to, like, when I first started recognizing, oh, this is grief, I would have this, well, I'll just grieve for 6 hours and then I'll be done. And then I can move back. Maybe that's my seven wing. But at the same time, like, grief makes us want to say, like, I'm just going to get through this quickly so I can go back into this. And the reality is the high side at five gives us the permission to step back, observe, reflect, ask some questions, gather some wisdom, bring in insight through quiet contemplation, not force. Because that's where vulnerability surfaces, and then we recognize and can accept that true strength comes in knowing when to pause and when to process and when to accept help and when to say no more, thank you, or when to pull back and retreat to reorganize. It's not failure. And I think even too, as an eight in my own world, being able to recognize, what do I perceive as failure and how will I allow it to remain without reframing it, without justifying it? Can I just be a failure in this area? Or can I experience failure? Can I recognize I am not a failure, but I am experiencing failure? Mm. That is all part of the healing process. And I think for an eight, going to that space is really, really vulnerable and good.
Mm, it really is. Ugh. Well, and I would say, okay, the person that I asked for the eight basically just said realizing to put the limitations on, like you said, if I'm in a leadership role, that it was okay to step away and say, I can't do this right now. I need to say no and create the space for me to feel what I need to feel, but I'm going to do that privately and not feel like I have to push through it in order to do the task at hand. And then I'm curious your perspective. Like, what do you think has been, as an eight, the most profound thing with the vulnerability aspect? Mm-hmm. Like, is a practical, like, this is how you've had to practice that vulnerability.
Well, I think as an outward, very vocal person on social media and through writing a book and having my own podcast and even as a coach in group settings and one-on-one, you know, I've been a speaker for 20 years and I used to say, I can tell you my life because I'm an open book and I'm not afraid. It's not scary to be vulnerable. And it was probably when I first started understanding Enneagram work where I was like, ooh, people who say I'm an open book. Now here, talk about stepping on toes, Rachel. Here I go. When people say I'm an open book, you can ask me anything. My response is to say, BS, you're a cultivated book. You've got pages that you're willing to explore because you have figured out how to tell that part of your story. I don't need you to be an open book. I need you to be honest with yourself. I need you to recognize that you are, again, that open book statement. It's that ego trying to say, this is my unrealistic worldview, that I'm an open book and that everything, I have everything figured out and there are no flaws in me and everything is great. I was really good at writing exactly the story I wanted other people to know, to hear from me, and to try to control the narrative that they got from it. Like, what are their takeaways from whatever I'm sharing? And that is a very autonomous. It can look like autonomy. It can feel like autonomy. Like, I'm in charge. I can control what they say. And the reality is, no, you can't. Yeah. Your job is to learn how to observe and get to know people and sit quietly with yourself and stop trying to control all of those things. And so I think real self-control for me came when I stopped trying to create an image. And to be fair, that created image, that sense of I need to control my image, was part of why I thought for so long, I must be a three. Because those pieces are there, right? And we all have that. We all have that desire to control others' understanding and image, their impression of us. But I think for me, recognizing in grief work that I needed limitations to what I would say yes to and what I was capable of, and being able to grieve pointed out, hey, girl, you have limitations already. You just have to honor them.
Yes. Oh, that's so good. I love that.
Yeah.
Okay. Enneagram 9, the peacemaker. I always like to, I'm sorry. I just don't, I always say the peacekeeper. I feel like they'd be willing, that's the, keeping the peace is the motivation there. Wants to create harmony in their environment, avoids conflict or can avoid conflict and tension, or would resist what would upset or disrupt themselves. In stress goes to 6 and in growth goes to 3.
Mm-hmm. So it's interesting you say that about the name, because all different schools of Enneagram thought have different names for the types, right? I have always understood peacekeeper to be a passive experience, like you're, which is kind of what you're describing when you talk about that low side of the 9, and the peacemaker to be a very intentional and active decision. That is someone who is willing to disrupt the status quo or the comfortability of everyone in order to generate a sense of peace. So I think both names can apply at times.
Yeah.
But that 9 is very receptive. They're so intuitive and they're so intelligent and they're always observing. I feel like all children are 9s. And indeed, like the 9 is the one that has access to all the different types, mm-hmm. And it's just so cool to watch a 9 in action because they're almost chameleon. Like they can, I don't remember where I read it, but I once upon a time read a 9 will make everyone in the room believe they are 100% on their side.
Yes.
And in agreement with them. And then they will go and they will have a completely different opinion of their own if they can form their opinion. And I remember thinking like, oh man, and it won't feel manipulative. It won't feel mm-hmm. like betrayal. It'll just feel like, wow, they really heard me. They really understood my point of view. And so that negative messaging and that stress side of going to that 6 where there's high avoidance and there's high control to try and protect is that they've got this message that everything will be fine if you just keep the peace. Mm-hmm. If you keep the peace, you won't have to feel any of this. If you keep the peace, everything will be perfect and it will resolve itself. Grief mm-hmm. will resolve itself. And so while that instinct may be to merge with others and take their okayness on or pretend that you're not in pain and defer your grief so that you don't disrupt the harmony of the group, the energy of the 6 gives our Enneagram type 9 the energy or the permission to actually pursue what brings them true peace, to face their emotions, not avoid them, not try to sort it out, but to really like lean toward their beautiful expression of what they're going through and to honor it as beautiful, right? That energy of the 6 really invites the 9 to engage, to say like, you can take action on your own behalf. You don't have to feel stuck. You can actually consider what it might look like to let your discomfort move you toward healing instead of saying, stay safe. There's danger everywhere. And I think too, that the 6 allows, the high side of 6 allows the 9 to have a voice, to recognize they get to advocate for themselves and they get to take responsibility for themselves, not just wait for life to happen to them, and to embrace discomfort as a pathway to growth, that they're not having to be so boundaried. They don't have to be fine all the time, that they can actually be real and still be valuable when they express, hey, I don't like this, or I don't like you, or I don't like your idea, or I just don't like any of this and I'm out, right? That 9 gets the permission to just find who they really are and find their voice and lean into it.
Mm, I love that. Well, the person I reached out to for in my world is one of my dearest friends who literally just texted me as we're recording. And she's like, I need more time with this response, which I love.
Oh my God, that's perfect.
Yeah, that's perfect. Okay, great. What I can say that I feel like it's that for the 9, it's the understanding they're not okay, I'm okay. It feels like that is the medicine of, or I'm not okay and that's okay. Or I'm not okay, they're not okay, and that's okay. Like truly being allowed to let somebody else be in their own experience and them honoring their own what is coming up for them. And I loved how you said that they can have their experience even if it's disruptive to other people and their experience. They can disrupt the peace in order to enter their own grief process or what they need and speaking up for them, for themselves. Yep. I love that. That is so good. Okay, so wrapping up, that's all nine. I feel like each one of those touches on the themes of grief that we, you know, not wanting to be repressing your emotion, expressing, sharing with others, feeling the full weight of it and the practices that allow that, creating the space to grief as well as creating the space for moving forward. What would you say that you would want those that are new in the world after we are new in the world of Enneagram to know, kind of wrapping that up after hearing all of that? What would you want them to make sure that they walk away with?
Yeah, I think it's really easy to recognize, okay, I need something new in grief, but I don't know what it is. And I will say, diving into Enneagram work when you are freshly grieving is really overwhelming. It's a lot. If you know your type, it can be an incredibly powerful tool. But if you are unfamiliar and all of this sounds good, yes, all of this is good for you. Take what serves, chew the meat, and spit out the bones, because the reality is in grief work, we are all looking for safety, security, and belonging. And within the Enneagram framework, you can find that and develop that within yourself and within your community. But you also don't need the Enneagram framework right now to do that. You can also approach Enneagram work when your world feels a little more settled, because the thing about Enneagram, and you can probably attest to this too, Rachel, is when you find where you fall on that circle, it can feel like coming home. It can feel like gaining a language to describe things you've experienced but don't know how to talk about. But it can also feel very exposing and very vulnerable and very scary. I remember when I finally said, let me just live as if I'm an eight for this week and learn about the eight and try it on for size. The intensity of feeling seen and understood, but even more so finding that subtype and realizing, oh, a social eight looks very different than a self-preservation three. No wonder. And ouch, right? So understanding that the primary goal of any of this grief work is to embody a sense of safety, security, and belonging within ourselves and find ways to experience that in relationship to others. This is a great tool for attunement to ourselves to say what feels like safety, security, and belonging. But it is also a very big distraction to learn about if you are grieving and you want to and need to attend to that grief, to process it, to truly metabolize the intensity of that emotion in your body toward a place where it feels, okay, this is a little more integrated and now I can move toward a framework like the Enneagram. To start asking some deeper questions and do what we call shadow work and address, well, why have I always felt this way? And I'll say this too, just because when we are grieving, it's never just the one thing that we are grieving. Mm-hmm. So when my mom died, I began grieving the future without her. I began grieving my daughter, who was 1.5 at the time, not knowing her grandmother. I began grieving, I don't really have a home to go to anymore. I don't have all of these things that I dreamed about, right? There are so many secondary losses that come along that are easier to touch when that core loss has been given time and space to express itself. And so I'm a big fan of saying, hey, these secondary losses might be really safer to approach through the lens of the Enneagram. But for someone who's brand new to the whole thing, I'm very much like safety, security, belonging, focus there. Yeah. it'll feel more soothing than trying to learn an entirely new personality framework like that, like we said, is not simple, that is incredibly nuanced. Mm,
very complex. Yes, I love that. Mm. You said the three were safety, would you say?
Security and belonging.
Yeah, that's powerful. Wow. Well, this has been amazing. I feel like I could ask 50 million other questions. I do want to ask, though, are you familiar with Sleeping at Last and his project?
Oh, of course.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
So I'll put that in the show notes as well, that when someone, again, yes, when you're not in the acute grief, but Ryan O'Neill with Sleeping at Last is a composer, and he wrote a song through a project that he had for each Enneagram number, and taking from the essence, it took the Chris Hewerts, I think, was the author of the book that helped him navigate those the songs and the essence of each number. But he takes the songs from the place of just the essence of the person, where and kind of where they go in stress, and then a redemptive arc of them coming home to themselves. And it's the most powerful. And he's a composer, so the songs are just gorgeous. And so
Andy's a nine.
Do what?
So he's got Andy's a nine. So he's got access to all these energies. And did you know that every sound you hear on each of those songs was crowdsourced from that Enneagram type? So every sound you hear in the one song, other than Ryan's voice, is a sound that was recorded individually and sent to him by a one that he knows. So it's just such a, it's such a, again, such a nuanced and intricate way to explore the creativity and the beauty that exists within these things. When, like we said, sometimes you look at the Enneagram and you think, wow, well, I'm just a pile of shadows and messes and discomfort and not good things. And the opposite is what is true.
Absolutely. Yes. You can find the songs obviously on iTunes, and they're labeled by their name, but his podcast, actually, he goes through and and tells you all the details of the composition of the song, and the fact that he used artists with that number to contribute to the songs is powerful.
Brilliant.
He's amazing. So I'll put that in there. Mandy, thank you so much for doing this. This is a dream come true for me conversation. So I appreciate you being here and the work clearly that you do. Where can people find you?
Yeah. Thank you for having me, Rachel. I love it. I love these conversations. I am very active on social media, and I'm at Mandy Capehart everywhere. So it's at Mandy, CAPEHART. Restorative Grief with Mandy Capehart is the podcast. Restorative Grief Project is the Facebook group that's private and free for coaching. Restorative Grief is the name of the book. Restorative Grief is the name of everything. So if you just search that, you'll probably find me if you can't spell my last name.
That is awesome. Thank you so much. Well, you guys know where to find her. Go look her up. And she's got some great material that she puts out, both with grief and with the Enneagram and grief. So yeah, definitely go follow her there. All right, guys, thank you for listening, and we will see you next time.